outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun, our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. When you listen to WFHB, sometimes you can't predict what you're going to hear next. Isn't that wonderful? Our volunteer DJs play music you won't find anywhere else on the radio. Our award-winning news and public affairs programs aren't heard on other stations, and we celebrate the delightful diversity and vibrant culture of South Central Indiana. But when you listen, remember that we need you. We always need donations from listeners to keep on going and growing. If you click the donate button on our website, wfhb.org, you'll find out how easy it is to become a sustaining member. If you can give us a small donation every month, automatically and securely, you'll help WFHB in the best way possible. And then when you hear our fun drive appeals, you'll feel really good. Thanks.
Hey, welcome this morning. By golly, this is a fine morning. Had a good week. Everything went real well. We even got a little rain, by gum, and my garden sure did need it. Hey, this is Inside Outdoors with old Buddy Bill here.
And this would be Don Jordan here.
Well, that's good. That's a Donna Jordan. Uh-huh.
And the Italian Don.
Is that the one?
The Don.
Who are you?
Hey, I'm Rich Reardon, and glad you guys all could join us. We're right here on Inside Outdoors on WFHB. And we did want to say something from last week. We appreciated getting a couple calls in through the answering machine at WFHB. We wish we could take your phone calls, but we can't right at the moment. But if you can do Zoom, we'd be glad to hear from you and join you in to part of our show and let you ask a question or two. So if you know how to Zoom, get in touch with us through Facebook on Inside Outdoors. You'll be able to send a PM message to Don. And he'll hook you up. You'll give him your email, and then I can talk to you and make sure everything works out. So anyway, thanks for listening this morning, and we're glad to be here again on Inside Outdoors.
Oh, ho, ho.
Yeah.
Yeah. This looks like about the last week I'll be on this.
Why is that, Bill?
Unless I get a wig. I don't have no hair. I just noticed I don't have no hair up there.
Well, you have to get a hat, Bill.
I can see some hair up there, Bill.
Yeah, I see some fuzz up there.
You see a little fuzz?
Yeah,
boy,
a little fuzz.
I'm glad you got good eyes. Man, I can't see it.
Well, yeah.
I've got a back audience here laughing at me.
Yeah.
It sticks up a little bit.
Where's my hat, my gosh. Lord, have mercy on me.
Well, nobody can see you except you and me and anybody else who's
Where's John at?
Well, we got a guest here today. I'm going to have to pass him my mic when he wants to talk. So let's get the show started and we'll introduce him. But that's John. Everybody knows John. And
everybody knows John.
Yeah.
If you don't know John, then
right.
you're out of whack.
Right.
Yeah.
So how's your week been there, Bill?
Oh, mine's been great. Yeah, like I said, when we started there, we got a little rain and needed a lot more, but thank the good Lord for what we did get. And I was thinking there a while ago, how's your tomato crop?
They're all coming up pretty good. And then the girls have decided to plant a whole bunch of flowers. They're making two flower gardens. And it's pretty interesting, and they're looking really good. And they're planning on selling some flowers by the end of the summer. And so there's all kinds of stuff going on over there.
Yeah. How do you water them? And you're watering them by hand.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Yep. So you know how that goes. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, and you know, if you're going to raise a garden around here anymore, and it's been that way most of the time anyway, but it seems like it's more now. You're going to have to put in some kind of a water system and have a water line to where you can water it without hauling water, because we're like you. We're hauling water out in barrels and dipping it out and putting it around the plants and stuff. And
right.
That gets to be a job, but I mean, if you don't do it, you're not going to have nothing. I mean, you know, you've got them out. You've worked and got them all out. And you got to keep them going.
Eventually, we'll have a drip system going, but it takes a while to get it all together. For in the meantime, it's the old-fashioned way, hauling water.
Yeah, the old-fashioned way. Well, you remember, well, I don't know where you might remember, but back years ago, well, water was scarce, really. About all we had was cisterns and stuff. And they'd go down to Moore's Creek and take the old pickup and two or three barrels and dip water out of Moore's Creek and haul it up for the hogs and chickens and cows or whatever you had,
right.
You know, because you didn't have enough water to. And ponds, the small lakes weren't in yet. That was they come later. Then everybody went to making a pond or a small lake or something, and that really relieved the drought part of it as far as water for the livestock. And I remember, of course, back then the Soil Conservation Department furnished some of the money, I think, for them and. Some of the directions on how to make one. I mean, ponds were just, there just wasn't any.
Yeah.
Until, I don't know, it was probably in the 50s when it really started, 40s maybe, late 40s, early 50s. I can't remember exactly when.
The Soil Conservation Service, I think you mentioned.
Right.
Started that. And
uh-huh.
They eventually were giving grants to people to build ponds.
Yeah. They were, and I know out in Missouri, they really went at it. Of course, Missouri was ahead of about any state there was as far as building ponds and small lakes and stuff.
Yes, they were.
They, if you want to know the truth, they're ahead of most of us in about anything we do.
Well, they are. In wildlife. And
wildlife is the next one I was going to mention too, Don.
They always have been. It's a great place for biologists to go, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And any of our biologists who have left for there have given it sterling praise. So I suppose it's still a top dollar place.
I would say it is among the top anyway, that's for sure. And like I said, you know, they're ahead of us on about anything, and they do a good job at it. That's the good part about it. They always do a good job. I don't know of a mess up really they've done. You always make mistakes. Everybody does that, but they do a good job regardless.
Well, they've always been in the vanguard of wildlife research, and especially with quail and grouse and turkeys. And Indiana has had some land lease programs with them, mm-hmm. where we traded them. I don't know what we traded. Did we trade them grouse for turkeys?
Yeah, mm-hmm. we traded our grouse for their turkeys, and that's how we got our turkey started.
And now they have our grouse, and we have none.
Yeah, we have none, and we got turkeys, and they got turkeys. So, see, there goes show you they do a pretty good job.
Well, the crash of the ruffed grouse population in Indiana, as well as we'd mentioned this last week, as well as the quail and the woodcock, it's just really been awful.
Uh-huh.
There's really no way you can excuse it, actually. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Yep, that's the way it is.
Yes, well, anyway, speaking of fisheries, had a little communication with Brian Schoenig. Do you remember Brian?
Old Brian, yeah.
Uh-huh. He was a biologist down here for Lake Monroe for many years and then became district biologist. And he's retired now, I think, but he still seems to be plugged into the DNR InfoTrack. And remember our question about what happened to the Asian carp fence up in northern Indiana?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Well, right here in black and white, Schoenig says the fence and berm is at Eagle Marsh in Fort Wayne. It is complete and has been for several years. As for any Asian carp in any of our reservoirs, we have not found any and have a monitoring and response plan on our website should that occur. So that's it. No Asian carp in any of our reservoirs, according to Schoenig, and the berm has been done for several years. So that was apparently, I think they said to keep it out of the Great Lakes, not just necessarily Lake Erie or Lake Michigan, but the Great Lakes in general, to keep the Asian carp out. So we haven't seen any in the Great Lakes that I know of, although it's been reported that their DNA is in the water. But so far, so good on that. The reports of carp inside Monroe Reservoir apparently are just that, reports. I haven't seen any.
I've seen regular carp, but, you know, up on the north side.
Yes, these are the Asian.
But, yeah, not the Asian ones. They're the ones that jump out of the water, right?
Yeah, and according to Dan Wagner, our buddy, they only do that when they're spawning, which is, I suppose, high summer,
mm-hmm.
and when they're disturbed. So you have to drive a boat over them. So if you go out there in your canoe, you're probably not going to get carped. No carping. So anyway, as far as we know, there are no Asian carp in Lake Monroe. There may be Asian carp in Salt Creek below the dam. And there are people down there catching bait fish that they take up to use in Lake Monroe.
Yeah.
So it's probably going to happen.
Just a matter of time.
Yes, I'd say you're right, Bill. I'd say you're right.
Well, you know, birds carrying eggs and stuff and dropping them in the water and that's why a lot of that gets spread anyway.
Yeah, and it's really pretty hard to stop it, actually. As we've discovered with the carp that we have now, the Chinese carp, which is quite a good game fish, according to people who fish for them in places where they haven't got any other kind of fish to fish for.
Right. But,
you can catch them on a fly rod. You know, a good place for catching them on rod and reel is where the creek comes into Lake Lemon.
Oh, is that the good place?
It's always been a good place. I'd say it probably still is. You can fish with a fly, or a lot of people still fish with corn.
Mm.
You know, a couple of little grains of yellow corn. That'd be canned Green Giant.
Hmm. Well, I see they're still catching wipers down by the dam. There's a fellow here got a pretty big one on your Facebook page.
Yes, they're still catching them like crazy. This is probably one of the better wiper years that in my memory.
Seems like everybody's catching them out of there.
Yes, if you're in the right place, bang.
Them small ones are not bad eating.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't want them one of them big ones, but them small ones, you take around 2 pound, 2 or 3 pound, 3 pound at the max. They're good eating.
Yeah, you cut that little red meat out of the side, and be sure to do that, or they're going to be a little fishy. And a lot of people will soak the meat overnight in milk.
Yeah,
which is another little trick you might try sometime.
That kind of takes the fishiness out, right?
Yes, they actually will have a sweeter taste. I think the milk does that.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to do that with a bluegill, though.
No.
You can take a plain old bluegill. I'll take them straight.
You'll take him straight, huh?
I will.
Tell me something. What's John got to say about this? Have you been fishing lately?
No, I haven't been, and I don't know much about the carp controversy. I've caught some carp, but I wasn't trying to. I've never ate carp. I've talked to a couple people that have eaten carp, and they say other than fighting the bones, it's pretty good eating.
Well, you know how you fix them carp? I'll tell you how you can fix them carp.
All right.
Let's hear it, Bill.
Okay, you catch them carp. Smaller the better, you know, it's like anything
right,
else.
Right, it seems like all fish are a little better except for some of the deep water.
But you fillet them rascals all up there and do the best you can and throw them in the pressure cooker. And you pressure cook them suckers and then you can them.
There you go.
And you put them in a can, and you save them for the winter, and you take them down, and you make salmon patties, and you won't tell the difference out of them.
Well, I don't doubt that. I knew.
Yeah, that's true. That's a true story. I'm not.
I don't doubt that a bit.
I have tried it, and you can't tell the difference between carp and salmon.
Well, I know a guy that cleaned out a pond he had, got so full of the real small bluegill, and they weren't growing. So a friend of his come over and caught a bunch of them little ones and was saving them, and he asked him what he's going to do. He says, well, I'm going to scale them, and I'm going to put them in the pressure cooker. And he said, some of them I'll can, and some of them I'll just eat. But he said, you won't believe how good they are.
Yeah, well, you can make salmon patties out of them, and you've got some good salmon patty.
You know, you guys were talking about the gardens and the watering. I told Don and I think Bill that I did a container garden this year. Well, my problem is I did too many containers, and they're all growing real good.
Well, that's good.
I was tickled to death. It was just taking me a couple bottles of water every day or so, make sure they were good and damp. And then we hit that little drought. And, man, I've been carrying the water to those buckets you wouldn't believe.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm fortunate they're right by the house. I got them right by the house. But,
well, you're lucky there.
I got lots of small tomatoes coming on. And I just grew early girls, cherry tomatoes, and some Romanos. And they all seem to be doing good. And I've been using that sulfur-based fungicide once a week and spraying the leaves. And I was going to tell Don, so far, I haven't got any leaf spot started.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I don't either, as far as I know. But, man, my plants, I've been watering practically every day.
Yep.
And my plants are enormous, and there's all kinds of tomatoes on them.
Well, now, that's good.
Whether that will last into the season, it's later in, you know, it's usually in July when that blight or whatever it is starts turning the leaves black.
July and early August is when I notice it.
Well, there you go. So you got to get your tomatoes early. That's the reason we all have early growth.
Yeah.
And I have a Mr. Stripey, and he has a few greens on it, but he's a little smaller than the early girls, and the orange cherry tomatoes.
Right, right.
That plant is nearly 5 feet tall.
Oh my, they're doing better than mine.
It's just scrawny looking. It doesn't have a lot of leaves on it, but it's tall and it has limbs on it.
Well, my cherry tomatoes just look like little shrubs. They're so bushy, but they're not real tall. But they've got tomatoes.
Those bush ones were available around here this year. I remember seeing them at tomato buying time.
Well, I can't say I was smart enough to buy them because they said that. I just bought what they had, and they seemed to be that variety.
Well, they'll probably produce a lot of tomatoes.
Well, they look good. They're got excellent color and a lot of foliage and a lot of small tomatoes.
Well, there you go. Early bumper crop this year.
Yeah, we're all bragging early. I hope we're still bragging later on.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, did you ever put out any Wonder Boys?
Yeah, years ago. I haven't for a long time.
Yeah, you ever done that, Don?
No, I've put out Big Boys, but no Wonder Boys.
Yeah, you no put them out and wonder what they're going to be. Yeah.
Okay, you got me on that one.
John, you said you put out Wonder Boys. What are they like? It's the first time we've ever tried it.
Well, the ones I put out were advertised as getting a bigger tomato. But having good meat. Not sometimes a big tomato is just full of vein.
Yeah.
They were supposed to be real good. Now I didn't think they were any better than Big Boys, the ones I planted.
Yeah. Well, I noticed they're producing earlier than our earlier girls.
Really?
That's
good.
They're just loaded out there.
That's good.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the deal is on them. I guess you wonder when you're going to pick them, I guess.
You guys were talking a week or two ago about the cicadas coming in.
Yeah, I can't hardly wait.
Yeah, that's supposed to be next year. And it's supposed to be a bumper crop. So they said,
good.
They said we won't be able to sleep unless we shut all the doors and windows.
Well, my gosh, we'll have some good gravy then.
Well, yeah, some of us will.
Yeah.
They said it'd be a boom year. Now, that's next year.
Yeah, that's next year, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, next year. And aren't we looking forward to that?
We are. We can't wait.
When I was a kid, I liked it, but Mom didn't. You guys were talking about that Sycamore Land Trust grant where they were opening a new area. And they had an article on that in the Spencer paper. I think it's the same place you're talking about. It's on the edge of Greene County on Edwards Road. And they've only got 1.6 miles of trail. But a friend of mine, his wife and child, walked it the other day, and they called and told me it's worth seeing. It's real nice.
What was the feature of that trail that they found?
They got to see waterfalls and a lot of sandstone cliffs.
Huh.
They said there was a lot of sandstone cliffs. And he didn't say it knocked his eyes out, but he just said it was a nice trail. According to this article, one of the two donors of that land was an IU horticulturist, and he was big on orchids. And there's supposedly orchids growing on the ground there, which I didn't know orchids would get through our winter.
Well, I think there's a lot of orchid-related plants.
And there's a lot of varieties of just about every plant, so they probably got... But there's not much in the paper as far as pictures. It just shows a little creek that doesn't look much different than the one that runs through my property when it rains. But they enjoyed it, and they live out in the country. They've got a woods of their own, so it's not like a city folks. As it might be worth looking at. That's about all the excitement I got to talk about. That ain't much, but Rich only gave me a few days' warning, and I hadn't really been trying to collect any info.
Yeah, is that close to Owen County there?
Yes.
Green and Owen?
Green and Owen on Edwards Road.
I don't know where Edwards
Road is. I'm not sure either. But they didn't have any trouble getting to it, so evidently it isn't too hard to find.
I guess you could find a map somewhere, right?
Well, yeah, I think Don's DNR buddies might be able to set you up with something.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've been on Edwards Road in the past. I just don't remember exactly where it is. I know it's near Owen County. It's on
well.
They call it on the edge of Greene County, so it must be just out of Owen County into Greene.
Yeah, I think it's over in that area where you know where the Monroe County Horse Saddle Club is?
Yeah.
If you turn there, I think you would get to Edwards Road.
Right.
if you turn back to the north off of that.
Yeah.
Just past the gas station out there. And there's also Green's Bluff over in there.
Right. Close
to you.
The guy I was talking to, he wants to go over there. He's never been over there, so they're going to call me someday, and we're going to drive over there. My legs have been giving me a lot of trouble right now, so I won't be hiking very much, but I can still get out and move around, so that's good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Keep moving.
Yep, move it or lose it.
Yeah, that's about right, yeah.
Well, let's see, boys, what else is going on? We had another question hanging in the air. You remember our discussion about the headwaters of East Fork of the White River?
Yeah.
Well, I happened to check that out here the other day, and it seems as if you're looking for the headwaters, depends on how you classify it. And in Indiana, the official beginning of the East Fork of the White River is in Columbus, Indiana, because that's where the driftwood and the flat rock come together. And they named it there beginning at that point. Well, actually, the old time and the way that most people measure the headwaters, it's whichever stream feeds the river you're in question has the longest distance to travel or goes the farthest. That is the headwaters. And the case of the East Fork of the White River, that happens to be the Big Blue River.
Ah!
It flows 128 miles from its source before merging with Sugar Creek and becoming the Driftwood River. The Driftwood River flows 24 miles to the Flat Rock River, creating the East Fork of the White River.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
This means the true source is the Big Blue River. By name, the West Fork is longer than the East Fork, but in natural order of things, the East Fork is 152 miles longer than the West Fork, and the headwaters of the two rivers is only 5 miles apart. Another interesting point is that beginning of the East Fork is actually farther west than the West Fork. Ah! So, that's kind of some interesting
stuff. Why would they classify the larger one less than the shorter one? I don't understand.
They didn't. They just named the river that was made by the Flat Rock and the Driftwood coming together. They named that starting there as the East Fork of the White River.
Okay. Okay.
So they didn't. All the stuff above it has other names.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So there you have it, boys. And I thought that was a pretty good explanation. And this is interesting also. the East Fork actually rises, the Big Blue River rises in Ohio, about a mile and a half across the Ohio border, way up there in northeast Indiana.
Coming out of a ground spring?
Well, it didn't say that. It just says, oh, no, it does say. It says primarily farm field drainage.
I'll be darned.
So it's farm field drainage begins the Big Blue and hence the East Fork of the White River.
That's really something to hear that created a river.
Well, you know, that's kind of the way it goes.
Right. I realize nature does that, but you don't hear about it much.
Well, they have lots of rules. You know, I know at one time they used to identify the source as the tributary stream that had the highest water flow per second, you know. But the way they really do it is the one that travels the longest, which seems reasonable to me. I'll accept that.
Yeah, I guess we better.
Yeah, so there you go, boys. They also say the East Fork is a good fishing stream, which I know to be true. And it's a pretty good fishing stream all the way down its entire length until it meets West Fork down by Petersburg. And there's only 45 miles of the two forks combined until it hits the Wabash at Mount Carmel.
Well, I hope you forgive me if I forget a lot of that.
That's okay.
That's a pretty convoluted story of the origins. I like it, but I know I won't remember it.
Well, that's okay, John. Nobody's going to give you a test on it.
Okay, well, that's good. I don't need a test. I don't need a test. Blood test's about the only test I can pass anymore.
What about the breathalyzer test? Do you ever have to pass that?
No, I never. I got threatened with one once, but he backed off and left me alone. So.
Oh, good. Good
yeah,
for you.
Yeah. Nope, I've never taken one.
No, I haven't either yet. Yet, anyway.
Yeah, well, I'm not looking forward to it.
So, my buddy Mike and his wife Rita are in Montana. They drove out there in 2 days. I mean, that's one night in the motel or two nights in the motel, I guess it was. But anyway, they're out there and there's no sign of coronavirus and nobody acts like it. There were no masks, no social distancing, nothing's closed. And the tourists are just beginning to roll in.
Well, until they get tourists, they probably practice social distancing just in normal life. A lot of those rural communities aren't up close and personal anyway, you know.
Hey, well, they are down at the bar.
Yeah, well, now that's a good. that's why they're so scared to let us into a bar now. I did think of one thing. I don't know if you guys have been paying any attention, but you know we're going to get the after effects of that big sandstorm.
It's here now.
Yeah. It's going to change the sky. And they say that if we get enough particulate to try not to leave your car out in it, because even though the iron in the moisture is good for the ground, it's bad for your car's finish.
Probably would be.
I can tell you all about that, having lived in northwest Indiana for a while. It rains sulfur from the skies up there every day, so you definitely don't want to leave your car outside. It eats your windshield.
I've seen that kind of damage on automobiles. Yeah.
So I can imagine if it's sand with iron in it, they'll probably not be good for your car.
No. They said to wash it immediately if you get a coverage.
Yes. And where's that supposed to fall?
Well, they got it showing it all the way across the state. They're saying in Indiana, they're talking central Indiana, but Owen County usually gets pulled into it. They're saying going in Friday night into Saturday is when we should, if we're going to see any particulate, that's when we should see it.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to try to remember to put the car in the parking garage, but one of them's got to sit out, so it'll probably be my poor truck. But, I didn't like the sound of it. Now, the weatherman was all excited about it like they always get, so they like a little disastrous weather now and then.
I guess I didn't see the weather report this morning. Where's this sandstorm coming from?
It originated, they're calling it the Saharan. So I've got a hunch it come out of the Saharan.
Is it coming from the east?
Oh, yeah, it's already going through New Orleans area and coming at us from that area. So it's kind of southern, more than I'd call it eastern. But it showed it on the big screen. Well, I don't have a huge screen, but they showed the big picture of it coming out of the Louisiana, Georgia area and moving toward us.
So the origin of it is unknown.
I don't know. They keep calling it the Saharan.
Yeah, it's from
that's a long way from
it's
New
from
Orleans.
It's from Sahara.
I just got the official report right here, and he said it's from Sahara.
It's from Africa. It's coming across the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes, but see, that's happened before. I've heard about that before. That's like those volcanoes. We could get some ash out of a volcano that was nowhere around us.
I looked it up, and it's from Africa. It's dust that comes off the Sahara. It blows straight across the ocean, usually ends up in the Caribbean, in Haiti and Jamaica and Cuba and southern Florida. And it's happened. It's a natural occurrence. And actually, there isn't enough nutrients in that area to support coral unless that this has happened for thousands and millions of years. So it apparently takes some of the nutrients off of the desert, and it's not just sand, it's dirt, it's dust, and it deposits it in the Caribbean mainly. That starts the coral growing in the water, and apparently it gives it enough nutrients to have the coral reefs that we know in the Caribbean. And then also it does some good to the crops in Florida. And but this year it's happened a little earlier and a lot more. And that's why you're seeing it all the way up into the States. Normally you can just kind of see it in southern Florida, and that's why you get these really great sunsets and sunrises because of the dust in the atmosphere time of year, like the midsummer. And so it's a little early this year, and it's supposedly really really packing a wallop. There's a lot of the dust. You can see it in if you look at satellite imagery, you can see it coming right across the whole Atlantic Ocean.
Well, that's probably a pretty spectacular example of the famous old trade winds that blew Christopher Columbus and the rest of those robber villains.
Absolutely.
Across the Atlantic Ocean. Blew them right into the Caribbean, in fact.
It was very easy to get over here and not so easy to get back.
That's right. That's right. It's a hard paddling against the wind.
Right.
Although they have that current up north, you know, up there in the North Sea.
Right. You kind of have to come through in the lower latitude and then come back and go up
right
to
big
the north.
Circle.
Yeah.
Big circle. It takes you to Ireland, I guess.
Yeah.
So, that's a pretty big story, actually.
Yeah.
And the coral reefs can certainly use all the help they can get. And good for the sandstorm.
Yeah.
More sandstorms. Power to the sandstorms.
You know, I just have to mention that last year, it was about a year ago right now, I went to Jamaica, and one of the most amazing things I did there was I snorkeled in the reef that's right off of Montego Bay, And it was really pretty amazing.
Did you sing Montego Bay while you were snorkeling?
Well, when I came up and popped my head up out of the water, yeah.
good for you.
But I had my GoPro, so I took underwater pictures of the reef and the fish, and it's just amazing. It's a little scary because right there, you go out over the reef for a ways, and then all of a sudden it drops off like hundreds of feet into a trench, and that's just a scary thing when you look down in there and you go, you just can't see anything. But there's no sharks there, which is interesting. So it's very very safe to do, and the only thing you got to really worry about is those sea urchins, and I guess there was one other kind of fish, some kind of puffer fish or something you had to watch out for.
Yeah, but there's a poisonous puffer.
Yeah, but other than that, it was pretty darn safe to go down there.
Stingrays?
That'd be the fugu.
Yeah. I know they have those in Japan because they eat them, but...
Yes, well, we have their cousins here.
Right.
What about...
And we also have lionfish here now.
Out of the aquariums released from probably Miami. So that's where a lot of those creatures come from.
Exactly.
The pythons that are in the Everglades, those were, you know, released from people's, as you know, people had them as pets and pet shops that sold them. And we had the big hurricane and Andrew, you know, that let a lot of animals loose, including those pythons.
Yes.
So, I was going to say that I was back on the trade winds thing, how strong those trade winds must really be, because it only takes a few days to cross the Atlantic Ocean at the height of the trade wind season, sailing from Africa. So it was, once they discovered that, highly used a lot, let's put it that way. All the pirates loved it, I guess.
Well, one of the good things about this dust storm is that they say it changes the water temperature because of the light can't get through it.
Oh.
And that makes it less possible that there's going to be a hurricane. So it will kind of calm everything down for a while when there's wind blowing, the trade winds.
Yes.
But it's not stirring up a hurricane because of the dust in the air. So that there is some positive things to it too. But it will it will affect your. They say down in Florida and some other areas in the Caribbean that it can affect you. You know, your breathing, and you know it's not very good for if you have breathing problems like asthma or whatever, and it will kind of irritate you a little bit and get on your cars and stuff, but definitely the biggest thing they talk about is beautiful sunrises and sunsets. And my friend down in Jamaica was telling me just recently the other day, because I asked her about it, that it's been spectacular there when the sun comes up and when the sun goes down.
Oh, they have some beautiful pollution caused sunsets in Florida.
Yeah, right.
Really?
I know.
They do.
Yeah.
And all you got to do is look out there. Beautiful. Beautiful. There's one sunset in particular that's, I always called the parfait sunset, because it would be in layers of red, blue, orange, different color of blue, different color of red, you know, just stacked on top of each other, spectacular sunsets. One of the things that you'd like to see down there, if you're going to go down there.
Well, we get some good sunsets around here now and then too. Bill, you seen any lately?
I haven't, but I'm not in a place where I can see too many. I got lots of trees around me, so I don't see too many sunsets. What about you, Bill?
No. Not really. I mean, there have been just normal. Earlier in the spring, you'll see more of them earlier in the spring.
Well, we got a couple of drownings from the DNR malfeasance line.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we got a couple of them. The most recent being Lake Michigan, which, you know, that's a little far from here. They say that was, what day was that? That was June the 23rd. So somebody drowned up there around 11 o'clock in the morning. Investigation ongoing, identity of victim withheld. So they saw a person being struck by a wave and not resurfacing. So it must have been a heck of a wave. So we got one in Lake Michigan. The other one is from, where is that? There it is. Jasper. Jasper man dies after falling into lake in Dubois County.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, near Holland, Indiana.
Yeah, know right where that's in.
According to witnesses, several people were swimming in a lake on private property when the victim fell from an elevated diving structure and hit his head before entering the water. Other swimmers attempted but were unable to rescue. Dubois County Dispatch. Read Mr. Swimmer 209. That was the 14th. That was last week. Approximately half a mile south of State Road 64 and the State Road 161 intersection near Holland. So the DNR divers got him.
That's too bad.
Yeah, and, hitting your head on something like that, you know, you'd hope that that would never happen, but...
it does.
It does. I had a cousin who dove from a actual pool diving board with not enough water in the pool, broke his neck and was paralyzed for life.
Oh, my.
Yeah, right. It was pretty awful.
Yes, that would be bad.
Yeah, other than that. Not too much other news from the DNR. We got gypsy moth treatments going on. We got news from Turkey Run In. That's not exactly in our area. Here we have the...
That's a nice little place, though. I've been up there a few times.
Turkey Run?
Turkey
yes.
Run, yep. It's a nice little area to camp.
We had our Speedway High School prom picnic at Turkey Run.
That was one of the first that was one of the first actual state parks, I believe. Way back in the 30s or some.
Yes, 20s. Pokagon might be also of that age, but yeah, Turkey Run's been around for a long time. It was one of the first ones that I ever went to as a kid. And of course, Sugar Creek flows right through that. And after that, it goes through Shades. Mm-hmm. Or before that. So you can do from one state park to another and have a nice canoe trip. It's rocky, has a good current. It's a really excellent creek to canoe. I would want it to have a little water in it. Maybe after the rain the other day, it might have been pretty lively.
Yeah, I was seeing, I think I remember seeing some kind of a documentary about it on PBS about Turkey Run and some of the other state parks around, but they originally it was to save it from logging, I believe, because they were just logging the heck out of everything, and they decided they wanted to try to save a few good spots. And of course, that if anybody knows where that is, it's sort of on your way up north.
It's not on your way to anywhere, really.
No, it's that's why I was trying to think. I can't think of anywhere that's around it you could talk about, really, but it's kind of west of Indianapolis, kind of, maybe southwest.
Yeah, it's over towards Park County, north of Park County.
Right.
So, yeah, it's out in the boondocks and one of our nicer state parks.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area.
Has lots of trails and just things that you usually see in a state park, you know?
Yep.
They have an amphitheater for this, that, and the other thing. They have an inn, which they don't do anymore. Our state parks still have inns. The ones that had them, hasn't been any new ones built lately. Around us, we have Spring Mill, McCormick's Creek, and Brown County. I mean, we're surrounded by beautiful state parks. So... if you're a state park kind of person, you got to check them out if you never have. Most kids that grow up in Indiana probably get to go to them when they're a kid, but as you get older, maybe you don't go as often because you've seen it before. But McCormick's Creek is always interesting.
Well, we're running out of time here a little bit. We still got a few minutes, but I'm going to hand the mic back over to John in case he wants to say something on the way out of here.
Yeah, John, let's hear about your birds. I've had a lot of nesting activities. I'm seeing a lot of young birds around. I got young purple finches, young cardinals, young house wrens, young starlings, which I'm not that wild about, but there are a lot of them out there, and young woodpeckers. I've seen we had the young pileated, humiliating woodpecker kid out here the other day.
And Don, I meant to ask you last week, remember I sent you that clip that we recorded on the back porch?
Yes, yes, I
but
did listen
to
that.
But you didn't know what it was?
No, I wasn't sure. The only thing that even comes to mind is the robin, as I think I did say, but there aren't that many birds that sing late in the evening, yeah. You know, just before dark. So, you got your robin, you got your, sometimes your whippoorwill, of course.
Yeah.
Wasn't a whippoorwill. You got your, great crested flycatcher, may make some noise at night. A mockingbird would definitely sing around that time. A wood thrush, might be singing, around dusk. But not that many. Crow maybe, but didn't sound like a crow. What did you think it was?
Well, I think you were saying late at night, but before dark. But this one's, he keeps doing it on into about 1 or 2 in the morning. Then he starts petering out, and you can tell he gets tired. It starts out more of a chirp, and then as it gets later in the night, it gets more like a raven or a crow would do, like, oh, you know, kind of that sound. So we can't figure out what it is.
Well, I'm robin's still my best guess. They do sing into the night, you know, when they're full of hormones. Mm-hmm. So it's possible, but who knows? You know, you got to get a picture of that dude.
Says he's never seen it. He just heard it.
Hey, yeah. What? Tell me about your birds, John.
Well, my bird varieties are looking good, but I haven't seen as many young ones. But that's probably just because I wasn't where they were. But I did have a lot of nesting going on around the various trees in the woods around my house. I did want to mention this, and I forgot it. The DNR is going to have a public hearing at McCormick Creek in July. It's going to be July 30th. And it didn't sound all that interesting to me, but I know Don can look it up on the web and find out a lot more about it. They did say they were considering putting the ruffed grouse on the endangered list, which I think they should. I think some place you mentioned a couple of weeks ago just opened up hunting season and named grouse in it. I couldn't believe that.
Well, that was the Indiana fall hunting season schedule, and yeah, they named the grouse. They still have a grouse season, even though they're on the grouse.
Yeah, well, they're going to be talking about the ruffed grouse going on the endangered species and a couple others, and I thought this was very weird. They're going to discuss allowing air guns during the deer season.
To shoot a deer?
I can't believe it. I've got a fairly high-powered air gun. Now, it's 10 years old, so they probably got better ones now. I killed squirrels with it, but I sure wouldn't shoot anything bigger than a squirrel.
Well, that's hard to believe.
Well, if I didn't look at it right here in print, I wouldn't believe it either.
But, well, I'll have to check that out.
You just see if there's any truth in it. This was published or given to the paper by the DNR, and it's talking about the public hearing on Thursday, July 30th at McCormick Creek, and there's going to be another one, but it's at Mounds, which is up in Anderson.
Yes, yes. Well, I guess if you're gonna go, you'll be going to the McCormick's Creek one if you're listening to us.
Yeah,
I expect so.
And don't trust that air gun thing till we hear a little more about it.
Well, you know, and they've had it. I mean, it's been an ongoing thing. There's some new caliber, or you know, when they went from to pistols. That was a big deal that you could hunt deer with pistols.
And, yeah.
And of course, a few years ago, just wham! All of a sudden, we got hunting with high-powered rifles, where this has always been a shotgun slug state.
Right.
So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they made slingshots legal for deer.
Well, they wouldn't have to worry about the deer population very much.
Well, I don't think they're too worried about that. There seems to be plenty of them. But still out here eating my hostas. That big old doe, she snorted at me four times the other night when I chased her away.
Well, hey, guys, we're running out of time. I really want to thank John for coming over and being on the show.
Good to see the old boys. I hadn't seen them for a while. Hey, Don, try and put some mothballs around your hostas on the above ground and see if that does any good.
Well, I have tried those in the past. Didn't help me much, but you never know. I'll give it a try again.
Well, it's just something I've heard about. I've never had to do it, but the deer eat my plants in the winter. They don't eat them in the summer.
Bill, do you have any cure for your for your deer other than the electric fence?
Yeah, you get well, you can get it to different lumber companies or farm stores. What's the name of that? Deer Be Gone. Deer Be Gone. That's what it is.
All right.
And spray about once every 3 weeks around your hostas and anything you don't want to eat up by deers. Or it works on squirrels, deers, about anything, rabbits. And it's deer and rabbit repellents what it is. And spray the first time you spray for 1 week, and then a week later spray again, and then after that once every 3 or 4 weeks, and I'll guarantee you they won't touch them.
There you go.
Well, I'll try that, Bill.
Yeah. Yep, try it.
You can get little quart bottles is what it is, and you just mix a little bit with water and spray your hostas and what, like I said, roses or whatever they're eating, and it'll put a stop to it.
Okay, Bill, I'll have to replace my bottles full of urine.
Yeah, you need to flush that down the stool.
And with that, I have extreme sadness. I must announce we're at the end of our show.
Bye,
well, folks. Have a good week. Be good. Be careful. Enjoy. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.